Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for April 28, 2012. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Join me as each and every week, welcome Tim Shiplett.
Good evening, sir.
And sitting in for Catherine Smith, a past guest of the Kudzu Vine, but I think a first-time guest host, president of the Young Democrats of Georgia, Stephen Golden.
That's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, and you know what? I say that, but I correct myself. I did the show remotely last time we were on. I remember I was at Dalton High School walking around, and I believe you're on. We had a lively discussion about polling and cell phones, so this is actually probably not your first time guest host.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's been a little while. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, but I do remember that. So after we've done about Tim 4 times 50, more than that, we're well over 200 of these shows, so, I mean, to remember a specific episode, you must have done a good job to leave that impression on me.
I appreciate it. I'll try and repeat performance tonight.
Well, that'll be good. Well, as I said when I introduced you, you're the president of the Young Democrats of Georgia, and last time you were on, you were not. So kind of tell us about how you got elected, and then we can go from there.
Absolutely. Well, I was actually elected just about, 2 weeks ago or so. I'm looking at my calendar, but I'll say about 2 weeks ago at our state convention, which we held this year in Atlanta. A lot of fantastic people ran for all the positions up and down the board, and we have what I think is a really exciting group of people who were elected and a ton of other people who want to remain engaged with the Young Democrats of Georgia for the next, couple of years. So, I was really honored to be elected, to have a lot of support from chapter leaders, and I really do look forward to doing some good work over the next 2 years of my term.
Yeah, well, Tim's probably got questions too, but I'm gonna go ahead and lead into that one. What are some of your plans and your vision for the Young Democrats of Georgia for the next 2 years, and I guess including the 2014 election?
Absolutely. That's actually, you just said it, my number one goal has to do with the 2014 election. And I think that really, everything that I want to see the organization do for the next 2 years leads up to that. I think that we, the Young Democrats of Georgia, we are an incredible organization. We have a lot of incredible people. What I want to see us do is become more active with issue activism. I want to, make sure that we are out there talking about the issues that are going to be affecting young people every single day throughout the state of Georgia. And we've started to do some great partnerships with groups like Mayors Against Illegal Guns and other such groups that we can, let people know about some of these dangerous things that Republicans are trying to do in Georgia. Another thing that I'm really passionate about is recruiting and training. We're going to continue our Young Democrats of Georgia University program, actually expand it a little bit. Our past president, Louis Elrod, who was the creator of that program, has graciously agreed to stay on and kind of see his vision through. And what we're going to be doing is a number of things with that. We want to, first of all, identify and recruit young Democratic candidates that are willing to run for office at every level. Young Democrats, we're really pleased that a lot of young Democrats are holding office, but we think that there could and should be more throughout the state. But of course, in order to get good young Democrats elected, you have to have good staff. You have to have good finance people. You have to have good campaign managers and so on and so forth. So we really want to support that by continuing to train the next generation of leaders on all different levels of the political spectrum. And then finally, one of the other things I really want to do is make sure that we are a presence under the Gold Dome, letting our legislators and our elected officials know how proposed bills are going to affect young people throughout the state of Georgia. And everything that we do, from our fundraising to our membership to our education, everything for me leads up to that, because when push comes to shove, the measure of of how good we are doing as the Young Democrats of Georgia, how good I'm doing as president, and how good we're doing as Georgia Democrats, to me, it's all going to come down to what happens during the 2014 election. And we're ready to go. People are excited. You know, I've been talking to people on a you know, daily basis about what we're going to do, and that's what we want to do in Young Democrats of Georgia, and I look forward to leading that charge.
Okay. Well, I still got some more questions, but I'm going to pass it to Tim to ask questions about your role as Young Democrats president specifically.
Yeah, Steve, I know that part of your role as president will be energizing young voters, obviously,
sure,
to vote Democratic. And as we know, in the two previous presidential elections, young voters voted in huge numbers, not only percentage-wise, but larger numbers historically for President Obama.
Yeah.
A lot of them are more liberal on social issues and things like that. What about here in Georgia? What have you discovered about the young voters here in Georgia? Are they pretty much in line with young voters across the country on the political spectrum now, or is there some work to do there?
Well, I mean, there's always work to do, certainly, but I think that we are in line with kind of nationally what's going on. I mean, young voters in Georgia tend to lean Democratic. I even know some registered Republican friends of mine, or some individuals that have been registered in other states and now vote in Georgia. They voted for Obama in 2008 and 2012. In large part because of social issues, like you said. And I think that young voters tend to be slightly more liberal and slightly more democratic. And I think what we need to do in order to make sure, like you said, that we continue to be out in large numbers is identify where populations of young voters exist and make sure we keep them engaged. And one of the things that I really want to see Young Democrats of Georgia do, and two of the things I just discussed, is keep those people engaged because as you're probably very familiar, it doesn't matter whether you're young or old or somewhere in between, what you see all too often is people get involved about every 4 years when there's a presidential election and then drop off the face of the earth for the next 3.5 years. And we want to keep people engaged every year, every day, every week, every month because politics doesn't happen once every 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're talking about engaging young voters, and I know that part of that would be expanding local chapters of the Young Democrats. Where have you targeted areas that of the state that need new chapters as opposed to the areas that seem to be strongest?
Sure. We have a fantastic new vice president of membership, Brent Weber, who is the immediate past president from UGA. And under him, UGA has seen incredible gains under his administration. We're really excited to have him on board as our vice president of membership because he's got a track record. And he and I have had a lot of conversations, and a lot of what we want to do is similar. We don't have a chapter, for example, in Albany, in a lot of areas of South Georgia, really. And we need to really build up in middle and South Georgia. Our big county chapter has not been as active in the past couple of years, and we really need to build that back up. Savannah, Chatham County just rechartered, but we, of course, want to make that a very robust chapter because certainly, Jack Kingston is going to be, or the first district, whoever is there, is going to be vulnerable in 2014, and we want to be a part of that. We want to build up our chapter in Richmond County as well. So really, our goals are to make sure that all the big universities are represented. So we're looking towards Columbus State University. We are looking towards Fort Valley State. Savannah State, we have some contacts down there, and we really want to build them up as well. There are a couple other colleges whose names fail me off the top of my head that we don't have charter chapters in. But then, of course, the big population centers. And I think a lot of what we're going to have to do as a party in total is really build up Middle and South Georgia, because we have a lot of strength. But Young Democrats of Georgia, too, we have a lot of strength in Atlanta and in North Georgia. We have a chapter in Rome, Floyd County. We have a chapter in Cartersville and how can I not think of county names right now? But where we don't have a lot of strength right now is in Middle and South Georgia, and that's where a lot of these hotly contested races are going to occur.
Okay, and I want to ask you about one more thing, then I'll throw it back to David to continue the conversation. A lot of people really don't have a firm grasp. I mean, they've heard of your organization, but they don't have a firm grasp of, shall we say, who you're affiliated with. So why don't you run down for us Young Democrats of Georgia's relations with, say, the National Young Democrats, the National Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party of Georgia. What kind of working relationship do you have with these groups?
Absolutely. We work with we don't have much contact with the DNC. I mean, I've met some individuals at the DNC, but we are very, very loosely affiliated with them. We are very strongly affiliated, however, with the Young Democrats of America. In fact, I drove in today from Birmingham for the Young Democrats of America Southeast Conference, where I was elected the Southeast Region Deputy Director. I've been very involved with the Young Democrats of America. In fact, our immediate past president, Louis Elrod, who is one of my absolute best friends in this world and who is an incredible president of our organization, he's running for vice president of the Young Democrats of America. So we are one of the largest states in YDA. We have a great relationship with them, and we hope to continue that for many years to come. I can go on for years about, the leaders we've had in YDA, but we're very strong with them. And the Democratic Party of Georgia as well. We are an affiliate organization of the DPG, as well as a number of, there are a couple of affiliate organizations of which we are one. And, we have strong ties with them as well. And we hope to continue those strong ties into the future. One of the coolest things I think for us is that the first vice president or the first vice chair of the party is Nikema Williams, and who was she was actually a national committee woman for the Young Democrats of Georgia, and she was actually at our Southeast Region Conference yesterday as well. So she's still active, and it's really nice having one of our own, if you will, in party leadership, because it really speaks volumes really to her more than anything, but it also shows that young people can do awesome things. And Chairman Berlon has always been a great friend of ours. I actually finally remember at GADCC dinners, he would always treat us really well, and he was one of the first people I met in politics as well. So we have great relationships with all those folks, and we also try and build relationships with other affiliated organizations and other Democratic-leaning organizations as well. And that's one of the things I really want to strengthen is our partnerships with other people, because we're only as good as our friends are. And if we work alone and we work in an insular fashion, not much is going to get done.
That's true. David, jump back in there, buddy.
Sure thing. Well, Stephen, you mentioned some of the bigger universities in the state, like UGA, and I don't know if you mentioned Georgia Southern or Georgia Tech, but I mean those larger universities where people go off to school and they live and they immerse themselves in the culture. And I get the sense that Young Democrats and Democrats in general do real well in those type settings. But I get the sense that we probably don't do as well with, younger voters that say don't go to college or just go to community college and still, kind of stay in the culture of, where they grew up, kind of still high school. You know, those are their friends. They just go to the community college. They may have jobs that take up a lot of their time. Do you see that divide in how folks vote, or even if they vote and are how active they are, and what can you do to kind of bridge it a little bit?
Sure. I mean, like you said, yeah, we do have chapters at a lot of the large universities. We actually have some at some of the smaller ones as well. We have a fantastic chapter at ABAC, Young Harris College. We have a chapter up there as well, and they stay very involved. But you're definitely right that sometimes there is, it's a lot of times I think it's an organizing gap. It's really easy for you to put posters on your college campus that say, you know, free pizza and Democrats, come to this room at this time. But it's, you know, when you're on a finite college campus, but it's really hard when, you know, you're in the community. And there are a lot of things I think we can do to bridge those gaps. And one of the things is to strengthen our county chapters. And the other thing is to really work on general outreach. Just in general, one of the things that that we're working on is to build up our outreach with the labor community. And we've always had very good ties with the labor leaders. But Jim Nichols, who is a good friend of mine as well and who is a Teamster, he is our labor outreach committee chair. And he one of the things that he and I have been discussing a lot is bringing people that are active, young people that are active in organized labor into our organization, because those are folks that that are in many cases natural-born Democrats, and they're people that we obviously affiliate with and we try and fight for on a daily basis for their value. So that's one of those things that we really want to do, and it's, you're absolutely right, it's a lot harder to reach folks that are at commuter colleges or at technical schools. You know, we've tried to start chapters at a couple technical schools, and it's actually become a problem. Sometimes they'll let the Republicans on campus, but they won't let the Democrats, and that doesn't make us feel very good, but we keep trying. And, you know, I think we just need to be incessant with our outreach, and sometimes it's just finding that one person, and with that one person, everything else falls into place, and we're going to keep trying to find those people all over the state, and you know, we want to reach into every corner, and that's that, yeah.
Well, I've got to do a follow-up question on something you said. You said some places they won't let the Democrats have a chapter, but they will the Republicans. We know about Liberty University in Virginia. Name names. I mean, what are these colleges in Georgia that won't let Democrats have a organization?
It's actually funny. I know the people up at Liberty University in Virginia, and they are they're great people, and they should have had that college. I mean, I can't recall all of them. I do recall problems occurring at Georgia Highlands. I don't remember if it was exactly. If I remember correctly, they were giving folks some trouble, and it was unfortunate. And it's also, you know, it happens at the high school level too. That sometimes there are a lot of high schools that usually it's not they discriminate against Democrats. It's just they say no political organizations at all.
Georgia Highlands is a public institution. So was it that they didn't want either party, or they just didn't want Democrats?
I don't recall exactly what it was. I mean, someone I think may have told me once that, and this was a couple of years ago or last year rather, that they had a Republican group or a Libertarian group or something, and they were getting some trouble with organizing a Democrats group. But you know, I wasn't active in that whole process, so I can't say for sure that they were actively saying you can't come in here because you're a Democrat. But you know, there certainly are colleges out there that you know we can all think of that it will probably be a little bit more difficult to organize Democrats on those campuses. So you know, we keep trying, and you know, Young Harris College is, you know, up there, you know, it's up in Republican territory, but we have a great chapter there. And I think that just, you know, that speaks to the fact that we can organize anywhere. I just need those passionate people, and we have it up at Young Harris. We have that, down in Liberty County. We have that all over the state, and it's in ABAC. It's just about keeping those up and finding those right people.
Yes. Well, then another question that's somewhat similar in nature with challenges. I also get the sense that, and if you look at the demographic trends of who's Democrats, we see some of this. People, you know, they're Democrats when they're 25, they're single, then they get married and have kids, and we lose some of those people. I'll give an example, Mike Jacobs. It was a good number of folks there, but there was a lunch, and he was talking about Georgia Senate Watch and how Democrats can do this and all this. And all this was under the auspices of the Young Democrats. And, of course, he got elected to the State House as a Democrat. Switch parties. And I think part of it, the reason he said is that he had matured in life.
Now, I matured in life, too. I've got two kids. I'm married. I didn't change. Stephen, what do you see as the way to keep people that are Democrats when they're 25 as Democrats when they're 35, 45, and then by the time they're 45, there's a good chance you keep them the rest of their life?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I try not to use Mike Jacobs as an example for much in life because he was a good Democrat, and I think he found an opportunity, and he decided that he would forsake those folks that elected him, a lot of whom are YDs, and he was one of us. So I think what it's about is education. The Republicans are very, very good at messaging. They're very good at coming up with fear words and trying to tell people that Democrats are tax and spend. And normally, you know, over a person's life, a person doesn't, you know, isn't younger in their life, you know, I'm pro-choice, and then later in their life they say, I'm anti-choice now. I've changed that. I've evolved or something like that. It actually is normally the exact opposite of that. And I think what we really need to do as a party and us as young Democrats of Georgia is I think we really need to focus on education and not, you know, put people in a classroom and not, you know, bombard them with numbers and statistics, but you know, lay down some truths. You know, lay down the fact that trickle-down economics does not work. Lay down the fact that giving tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires, it's not a thing that's going to stimulate our economy. Let them know that Democrats are not responsible for the sequester. You know, all those different things, if we can win at the messaging and we can win at education, then we can keep people around because if people do turn from Democrat to Republican, I would think it's primarily because of fiscal issues and not because of social issues. But if people understand that, you know, Democrats, we're not socialists. We don't believe that everybody should pay 100% taxes. We believe that people should have the opportunity to have their Social Security benefits and their Medicare benefits and Medicaid benefits. We don't believe in fraud for any of those things. And we don't believe that people should just rampantly, you know, that we don't believe in gaming the system, that if people realize that that's what our party stands for and that we stand for good things, then that's how we'll lose people.
Steve, I guess this is the time I need to jump in with a rather obvious question. Say around the state somewhere tonight in some small county, there's a half dozen young people listening to this show right now, and they say, man, we'd love to help. Well, what do we do and who do we contact? Well, Steve, what do they do and who do they contact if they want to start a chapter?
Well, that is a great question. Well, I would point anybody to our website, georgiyds.org. If you are young, you can go there and you can click on a link that says it says something about membership. But it's very easy to figure out how to start a chapter. You can click on that. You know, go to chapters. I'll tell you right now because I'm now looking at my computer. You go on chapters. Click on start a chapter right under there, and that will send an email to us and let us know that you would like to start a brand new chapter of the Young Democrats of Georgia. If you are no longer a young Democrat, or as we call you, a young at heart Democrat, and you know people, certainly go on there as well and let us know. And certainly we would always accept any advice or help, financial or otherwise, that will promote our organization and move us forward. And as always, my email, which is always on me because my phone is probably surgically attached to me, but you can email me. It's you laugh, but it's probably true. It's president@georgiyds.org. You can email me there anytime if you have questions, comments, concerns, want to start a chapter, and I will make sure that you get hooked up with the right people within our organization to make that happen.
Oh, and do you have field people that cover various parts of the state, like, say, the Democratic Party of Georgia does? Or
we do, yeah. We actually have appointed region directors, and not all of them have been appointed yet. That's happening now, and people are putting in their applications for those positions. We actually do. We have one already appointed, Ronald Rivera, down in southeast Georgia. He started up the Liberty County Young Democrats. He's awesome. He's fantastic. So if you're in Southeast Georgia, Ronald Rivera is a great guy to contact, and he's fantastic. He's going places. But we do have region directors, is what we call them, and they are in part responsible for the membership of their region and trying to encourage new chapters to spring up.
Okay, David.
Yes. Tim, that was a beautiful kind of closing question on this part of the conversation about how folks can join Stephen and the Young Democrats. Well, now let's talk about some Georgia races, if you will, and Georgia politics, since obviously you're going to be kind of a power player, decision maker in what goes on in 2014. And I'm going to ask you a question, Stephen. If you could choose one race to win for Democrats, the governor's office or the U.S. Senate seat, which one do you think will be more valuable to the party?
Well, first of all, I want to say it's scary to me that I could be a power player in anything. That is terrifying, and I would caution anybody not to let me do that. But that's a hard question because I think both are incredibly important. But right now, I think for me, a lot of my focus is on the U.S. Senate seat. And my reason for that is that, you know, there's a non-zero chance that the person that the Republicans put up is not a Saxby Chambliss. Saxby Chambliss, I don't agree with him on most things, but he's at least willing to be bipartisan at least on paper. It is terrifying to me that an individual like Paul Brown or Phil Gingrich or Tom Price could be a United States senator from the state of Georgia. I'm legitimately scared that could happen. And I think we need a really good Democrat in that race because I think that, Nathan, don't get me wrong, I think Nathan Deal has not been a good governor. He has made some very poor decisions. But I think that we could see a lot more damage from a Senator Paul Brown than we could from a Governor Nathan Deal. So if I had to choose one, it would probably be U.S. Senate for that reason.
Yes. Well, I can continue to ask you questions, and I will later, but I'm going to get it to Tim a little quicker so he can ask some Georgia politics questions.
Now, don't laugh again when I repeat what David said, that you will be a power player, you know, for the Democratic Party. You underestimate yourself. We don't. That being said, Steve, you know, Saxby Chambliss retiring has produced this veritable domino effect up and down the ballot. Races are going to open because of this, probably all the way down to the local legislative level.
Yeah.
So is the Young Democrats of Georgia going to be involved in candidate recruitment for these open seats?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no. I mean, I don't know if this makes me sad or good. I have no idea how to characterize this. But the day after about 2 days after I gave myself a break, after the 2012 elections, I started looking at the numbers and thinking about candidate recruitment. I have personally already talked to people about it. And like I said before, that is incredibly important. I mean, we're going to see people up and down the ballot. I mean, we're going to see people down to the local dog catcher because they're going to be, everybody's moving up. You know, Ed Lindsay is already running for Congress, so somebody's got to run for Ed Lindsay's seat. And that's going to happen on many different levels. So we're going to be active. We want to help identify people. We want more young Democrats in office, but you know, frankly, we would like Democrats of any age that will stand with young Democrats and that will stand for progressive values and will stand for the Democratic Party. If we can play any part in helping to identify those candidates, and, you know, once election season comes around, if, you know, our members want to get involved with those campaigns, that's what we're here for. That's really, you know, when push comes to shove, that's what our end game is.
Mm-hmm. That kind of segues into the next question I was going to ask. You know, let me say right off that I don't think when you call names you're going to be like just picking out favorites. But when you go to talking about attractive-looking candidates for high office in Georgia, for statewide office, what are some names of future, dare I say, power players that come to mind?
Man, what's great about the Democratic, for me, at least in the Democratic Party of Georgia, is that we have a hell of a bench now. And we have people that, you know, whether they run in 2014 or wait or anything, we have some people. Jason Carter, who is, I mean, he's insanely good. I am, words don't describe how great he is. He's somebody who's great. Stacey Evans, who's the past president of the Young Democrats of Georgia. Stacey Abrams, Scott Holcomb is great. Teresa Tomlinson, I've heard incredible things about her. I've never had the pleasure of meeting her myself, but I've heard incredible things that she's doing in Columbus. And the people that have vouched for her, I will take them at their word. And I think that she's going to be somebody that's going to be a mover and shaker as well. You know, I think that there are some people that that have left the legislature in recent years for one reason or another, like Elena Parent. And like Stephanie Stuckey Benfield, both of whom have been incredible friends of mine and of the organization, that are still incredible people that I think can move up. David Wilkerson, also a former YD officer in Todd County, is somebody who I think is incredibly impressive. You know, I can keep going because there are so many people I think now that are in elected office that that really have a chance to be the next generation of Democrats in statewide office or in, you know, or in national office. So those are just a couple of them, but, you know, we're lucky. We're lucky.
Yeah, and when we talk about those people attaining statewide office, do you see the state, you know, there's no denying what's been going on in this state for the last decade. We have been taking a pasting, you know, statewide.
We have.
When will the field be level for that opportunity to score big in statewide elections? Will it be next year or would, say, 2018 or beyond be a more likely target, in your opinion?
If you want to talk realistic targets, I think 2018 is going to be our big year. I really do. I think 2014, I think we can make some gains. First of all, I know we can make some gains. At the state Senate and the state House level, we are going to make gains. I would put money down on that right now because there are, you know, just off the top of my head, I can think of an individual, Renita Hamilton, who ran in Gwinnett County and didn't have the big organization. She didn't have a big budget. She came within like 300 votes of winning in a district that was made for a Republican. She was not supposed to get anywhere near that. I mean, there are some seats that we did really well that we were not expecting to throughout the state of Georgia. So I think in 2014, we're going to make some really real gains. And in 2016 and 2018, we're going to make some massive gains.
Okay, No, go ahead and finish that talk.
Well, I was going to say, statewide, I think 2014 we have a chance. I think 2018 we have a hell of a chance. So,
okay. What I'm going to do now is I can't let it go back to David without giving you a tough question. So are you ready for your tough question?
I'm ready for my tough question.
All right, here it is. Years ago, and I'm not going to say how many years ago because I'm that old. Years ago, when I first got involved in politics, people would quite often say to me, well, Tim, when are you going to run for political office yourself? So I throw that question to you, Steve. You're a young up-and-comer in the state, obviously, and I'd be willing to bet my next breakfast that some people have already asked you about this. Are you looking at a future as an elected official? Or is that something that you've not thought of yet?
I'd be lying if I said I hadn't thought of it. You know, I would one day, if you know the opportunity's right, I would absolutely consider it. I mean, the reason I got involved with Young Democrats and in public service in general is because, you know, not only do I love the people, but I really think that one person can make a difference and one passionate person can make a difference. I'm certainly not looking for 2014, probably 2016 or even 2018, because I'm still in law school, you know, still going to be looking for a job in about a year and a half. So if there's anybody out there that needs a bankruptcy attorney to be paid more money than he deserves, I'm your guy. you know, there's certainly the way that, and I've been asked this question before, of course, and, you know, for me, if the place is right, the time is right, I'd absolutely consider it, because, you know, I'd be lying if I said that it wouldn't be kind of fun, and I don't think that, or I would be lying if I said that I didn't think I could do some great things, but it's certainly not on my immediate horizon right now, and if you ask me for a timetable, I couldn't tell you, because I think for me, it's one of those things that's like, it's got to be organic, but you know, one day the opportunity will arise, and maybe I'll take it.
Hey, and wouldn't you know, David and I both cut our teeth in politics as king makers. Maybe we have a great marriage brewing here. So,
I look forward to being made a king.
All right. We'll throw it back to you, David.
Yes. Well, Stephen, I have a tough question for you, too. You were talking about the U.S. Senate race being the one that you'd like to see. And, of course, there seems to be two top names emerging for the Democratic Party, John Barrow and Michelle Nunn. Which one of those do you prefer over the other, or is it choice C, someone else?
Man, God, you're going to get me in trouble with people. you know, I think both of them, and this is a complete cop-out answer, but early on, I said that both of them would be incredible candidates. John Barrow has a proven track record in the state of surviving when he was not supposed to survive. And he has fundraising prowess. He has name recognition. And he can help in South Georgia, where I said before, you know, we don't where we need help. Michelle Nunn, I mean, not only does she, of course, she has a sponsor that's held the position before, but she herself is incredibly impressive. And quite frankly, I think we need more female representation from Georgia up in Washington. And I can think of very few people other than her that would be nearly as qualified. And whichever one of the two ends up being I hope it's one of the two being our nominee. I certainly think that there are other people that are qualified for the job, but I think both of them would be ready for the job. You know, and I'm ready to support whoever our nominee is. I just don't know that one of them is any better than the other.
Yes. Well, then, of course, if John Barrow were the nominee, that would open up his House seat, and that seems to be one that, you know, the Republicans always have on their watch list. But then with Paul Brown, Phil Gingrich, likely Jack Kingston, possibly Tom Price running, what are some of the congressional districts you see that are really ones that Georgia Democrats should go after?
Yeah, oh, man, all of them? No, if I were to stand here and say the ones that we really need to look at, the 6th and the 11th are both huge. The 6th district, and here's some inside baseball, the 6th district has been made substantially more Democratic. They went south, farther south into DeKalb County towards Doraville and towards down, you know, past Brookhaven into areas that are Democratic territory, or at least not Republican territory. So they've done that, and it's also a very high population of women in that area, which I think it's the highest population of women of any congressional district in the state of Georgia. And that's, you know, also something rather interesting, because a woman will tend to lean Democratic more than Republican. The 11th district, you know, also I currently reside in the 11th district, and I am like a literally a stone's throw away from Atlanta, and I live in a Democratic precinct in the 11th. So they've added more there as well, and taken away a lot of Phil Gingrich's base up where you are, up in, you know, Rome and those sorts of areas. So he's lost a lot of his home. And now that he's running for Senate, you know, it gets a little bit weird. I think John Barrow, so, you know, if he does make the run for Senate, there are two Democrats that I can think of off the top of my head that would make hell of a run for that seat. And also, I think the first district is huge because Jeff Kingston might be making a run, and even if he doesn't, they've made that district more Democratic, and demographic trends have gone that way. And of course, Paul Brown's district is always on my radar because we have to stop the crazy. Any time that there's an open seat, it's always an opportunity for us. So those are probably the ones that my eyes are on. And I know in speaking with people at the DPG and around the state, their eyes are very much focused on those as well.
Yes. Well, let me go ahead and turn it to another Georgia political topic before we move off of Georgia politics, and that would be Paul Brown Paul Brown endorsed Ron Paul this week, and I'm going to actually start off with Tim, since this is something Tim and I hadn't discussed. Tim, what do you make of this endorsement?
Yeah, gee, what a shock. One libertarian endorses the other, and that's really all that it is. I don't think an endorsement by Ron Paul really helps or hurts Paul Brown, because Paul Brown's already going to get the votes of the Paul bots, you know, dare I call them that. That's what we call them on the blog that I post on. I don't think, you know, that's going to help or hurt him, except it might help him a little bit with fundraising. Other than that, I don't think it's going to make much of a ripple, do y'all?
Yeah, Stephen, what do you think?
I give the two words, who cares? Ron, here's the thing about Ron Paul is that, you know, I don't necessarily know that it's going to make a big difference here in the U.S. Senate race. And quite frankly, I don't understand how they're exactly compatible. Ron Paul, you know, I don't like him. He and I don't agree. But of all Republican presidential candidates, other than maybe John Huntsman, he's the one that occasionally says something mildly rational. Paul Brown, I don't think, has made a rational statement in his life. And so I think that even with Ron Paul's endorsement, some of the Ron Paul folks here in Georgia, some of whom I know, I think they're going to raise their eyebrow a little bit and say, we're not going with Paul Brown. We're smarter than to know that this guy is not one of us. So I think that it's probably more hurtful to Ron Paul than it's helpful to Paul Brown.
Steve, who would any other Ron Paul supporters vote for then, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I would think that, you know, maybe a Phil Gingrey might be more appealing to them. You know, but part of me thinks that, you know, the lot of Ron Paul folk that I know, a lot of the more libertarian leaning people out there, they're not dumb. And they don't believe that God is going to come from the heavens and strike down evolution believers. And, they, you know, what I can't even think of the things that Paul Brown actually says out loud to people, because for me, that's like, those are crazy thoughts. And I just don't know that Ron Paul supporters are going to say, just because Ron Paul said it, this guy must be not crazy anymore.
Oh, cute.
Hey, yeah, I mean, that? I figured this was some way for, you know, Paul Brown to get a little more leverage, particularly if those folks do buy into Paul Brown, then he'd have this more fervent support base and would help him out. And, of course, his strategy, I think, has to be have more candidates in the Republican primary to do better in the Republican primary. And then, of course, he's got to hope that Georgia is just as Republican as has been in the last few cycles, because he would be most the candidate, I guess, would be the best chance for us to win. But then, of course, if he did win, then we'd be stuck with him as senator for 6 years, embarrassing our state.
Yep. Well, David, you mentioned that you thought it would be better for Brown if a lot more candidates were in the race. You know, we've talked about Dr. Gingrey. We think his plan is for just he and Paul Brown to be in the race.
Yes.
So you don't think Paul Brown would look at it? You don't think Brown would look at it that way?
I think he would actually like to make the runoff and then have a runoff where he could then, you know, take it just because his supporters came out more in mass. And then would be the Republican nominee, the other establishment Republican nominee would be seen as milquetoast. Kind of like how he beat Jim Whitehead.
And you know what? That's right. I was about to say that's why he's in Congress now. We interviewed him in a very memorable interview just a couple of days before that runoff. And it's amazing what a great job he did that day. Do you recall that?
He seemed more rational than he ever has
to
me.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I guess I better have more, you know, conversations where it's me, him, and you and one other person, because that seems to be him at his best. I believe it was Vernita Smith on with us that night.
Really?
Well, let's stay with the Browns. Let's stay with the Pauls, if you will. And Rand Paul has already scheduled visits both to Iowa and New Hampshire. Now, most of the field, both Democrat and Republican, are saying, let's see what Hillary does, but not our man Rand Paul, the younger of the Pauls. Sounds like he's running for sure, right, Stephen?
Yeah. I was kind of surprised whether they're going to run in 2012. But, I think Rand Paul's definitely going to be running in 2016. I think he's really banking on his father's support is to come out in full force for him and then somehow to bridge the gap. Because the Rand Paul people have always kind of been, they're not a fringe element because they're actually very real and they're very powerful, but they've never commanded a majority of the Republican Party. I think he's hoping to gain some more folks, and frankly, I think he's going for the young voters too. But I'm almost positive he is going to be running in 2016, and I will bet my next breakfast on that one.
Yeah.
Well, you look at this poll in the state of New Hampshire. Brand new poll has Paul with 28%, Rubio at 25%, Christie at 14%, Bush and Ryan at 7%. But when you start digging down into that poll, you see the problem that Senator Paul has. Up there in New Hampshire, in the Republican primary, independent and other unaffiliated voters can vote in the Republican primary. Paul gets support from a majority of independent voters, young unaffiliated voters. He actually runs behind Rubio and self-identified Republican voters. So you got to wonder, guys, what will the hardcore traditional Republican activist voters think here? Is that going to be Rand Paul's weakness? What do you think?
Well, is that to Stephen or me?
Either one of you. Just jump
you
in
go ahead.
Well, I think if Rand Paul gets in, then he's going to have that advantage. And obviously he has kind of the built-in Paul legacy, if you will, and that's going to give him some votes. And I tell you another thing. I think a lot of the Republicans see that Hillary Clinton's going to be run almost like an incumbent and a popular one at that. So you may see some more Republicans younger ones stay out of the race. And that's just going to help him get the nomination. It's not going to help him win, obviously. It could be in a 1964 type situation where he's the Barry Goldwater. He may not be running because he, you know, wants to have the best chance of winning. He just wants to be a true believer.
Yeah, you know, Steve, you cringe at the thought of Paul Brown being a U.S. senator. Don't you also cringe just a tiny wee bit at the thought of Senator Rand Paul being the Republican nominee for president?
Oh, absolutely. I cringe at most of the names that I hear going around. But, Rand Paul is a scary name for me because he's an obstructionist. It would be the same thing as if you said President Ted Cruz or, you know, nominee Ted Cruz. You know, it's just, you know, I appreciate passion and I appreciate of vigor, but I don't appreciate being lied to, and I don't appreciate grandstanding for its own sake. And I think that both of them are fantastic examples of how Washington can't get anything done. And
go ahead, Snake. The Rand Pauls of the world, they're just going to be characters unto themselves. I think, you know, like we talked about before, a Paul's going to run probably 3, 4, 5 straight elections in America, if you will. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you think then he's going to be like his father?
I think he may run multiple times. I mean, what is Ron run 3 straight times, 2000, 2004, 2008? So if we get a time frame.
He was also the Libertarian nominee, too, one time. So I guess he's run 4 times. Yeah.
4 times. Then if Rand runs once only, that's, 5 elections. So that gets me right there to my math. Now, if Rand runs multiple times, which I think he could, then you're really getting up there. Especially if he gets pushed out in Kentucky down the road just because he's seen as too big of a liability and a flake for a state that is not all the time crazy by any means. Let me move on to another topic real quick as my phone goes crazy with text, by the way. If you can hear that ding in the background, I apologize. It's usually not like this in the 7 o'clock hour on Sundays. But talking about crazy or talking about sane, Frank Luntz, in what he says was a private conversation, which apparently, you know, not all conversations are private anymore, he got recorded honestly telling the truth on Rush Limbaugh, that Rush Limbaugh has hurt the Republican Party by making everybody ideological pure, and in this case, on immigration. Now, of course, I think Frank Luntz is afraid of Rush Limbaugh, and he had to make a big stink and say that he was blaming the University of Pennsylvania, and he'd pull a scholarship and never speak there, and doesn't know why anybody would ever go speak at University of Pennsylvania again. Just blamed all the university, which was, you know, bizarre in itself. But the bigger issue, was Frank Luntz right in what he was recorded as saying, and do y'all agree that he was afraid of Rush Limbaugh, and that's why he reacted in that way? Jim?
Yeah. You know, we've seen elected officials bow down to Limbaugh before. The truth of the matter is, though, with what Lott said, and I would consider him a thinker, in that party. I would imagine that a lot of the thinkers in the GOP feel that way about Limbaugh, but publicly, as you just alluded to, they are forced to pay him homage because he has a large following. He is a power broker in that party. There's another issue here, though, and that's privacy. What should a public figure expect in the way of privacy when he utters any statement in an open forum such as that?
I to answer both your questions, the answer is yes, he was correct. I don't wish he would have more of a backbone, because ultimately destruction of the Republican Party is going to come at the hands of folks like Rush Limbaugh and those ideological purists. And, you know, if Frank Luntz, he's absolutely right. And if Republicans actually stood up and said, get rid of these guys, we need to actually become a non-radicalized wing, then perhaps they would win elections and they would have a future as a major political party in the country, but alas, they won't. And as for the question, you know, about public recording or recordings, I tell candidates and people I work for that you should never, ever say anything in a public forum that you would not be willing to allow out there. Because at this point in time, you have no idea what's being said or, you know, what is going to happen. And who's recording you and anything of that sort, you know. obviously people are going to be discussing things that they probably shouldn't or saying things that may not want to become public at varying different degrees in their, you know, in their political careers. But do it on the cell phone or do it at somebody's house when you who are not at a public event, because when you're at a public event, just expect somebody's going to overhear you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, David, you're a teacher. That everybody knows that. This was a classroom setting at the University of Pennsylvania. Luntz was asked this question. He, before he answered, he hesitated, and then he asked who was recording it. Well, one media source raised their hand. He asked them to turn the recording off. And then he went on and began talking, assuming that he could speak freely without fear of being recorded, and then the next thing you know, this turns up in the hands of David Corn.
Yeah.
What's your take on that if you're running that classroom?
Well, it's not so much the classroom, it's journalism gets involved. And if he says,
yeah,
is this being recorded? That's kind of like off the record. And Mother Jones, because I actually saw the clip off of Mother Jones, being a news source, it should, you know, it shouldn't have been recorded or it shouldn't have been printed on their site. Now, if there's some blogger somewhere that, or not a blogger in the sense of this person wants to become a journalist, but, you know, anybody with 5 seconds can start a blog. I'm talking about just somewhere it could have been posted and still kind of not the best journalism ethics. But, I mean, Mother Jones, this is different than the videotape at the Romney fundraiser. They should have refrained from posting that video. Plus, it was just a disaster to watch. It was pointed up at the ceiling,
yeah,
and you could barely hear what was said, a lot of it.
But
just the fact, though, that he had to go off on the college, which obviously, I mean, I don't know the enrollment of University of Pennsylvania. Let's say it's 10,000 people. You know, if one person recorded it out of 10,000 people, well, my goodness, how can you just pull your scholarship from the college and say you'll never come
mm-hmm.
there? Obviously, that's an overreaction to how fearful you are of Rush Limbaugh and those types. And that's a sad state of affairs, because this is a guy that's a much deeper thinker in the Republican Party than I would
right.
dare say most of your radio talk shot show.
And so then you hold to the opinion that this reaction was prompted by a fear of Limbaugh?
I do think, he's quite, you know, ticked off at the person who recorded it, ticked off at Mother Jones for posting it, but that's not the University of Pennsylvania. It's not like the University of Pennsylvania's AV department recorded it and turned it over. I mean, that's just not rationalization, but, you know, when you broaden something, generalization, when you broaden it out to a bigger sphere where it didn't belong. So I think this is somehow he's got to act so outraged, so indignant, that all those folks will say, well, it wasn't Frank's fault. Although I do think that they're going to hold him to the content of his words, and if they're going to get mad, they're going to get mad anyway.
Yeah, and I have one more question for Steve, and then I'll let you move the topics along, David. Steve, 2 weeks ago, you were not a major public figure in this state. Now, obviously, you are. So, as a public figure, should you always go with the expectation that you have to carefully choose every word you utter in public?
I mean, I think as a general precept, folks should carefully choose what they utter in public, because all too often I hear people saying things in public that are rather inappropriate for pretty much any setting. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, certainly, you know, I do try and choose my words, because, you know, I know that what I say can affect people. And I think I need to continue to do that. And I think whether or not you characterize me or anybody else as a public figure, you know, you should always choose your words. But especially, you know, if you're somebody who has some degree of fame or infamy, it is very likely that if you say something dumb in public, it will be used against you. And it's like the Miranda rights that I learned about in law school. You know, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of public opinion. And it is so true, you know, and it's so true on so many levels. So, yeah, I mean, I try and choose my words. And, you know, it's also that I remain, you know, on this radio show, while you say, you know, which one of the two Democrats possibly running for Senate would you support? Well, I love them both. Because God knows if I give you the wrong answer on that one, I'm going to be getting a phone call later tonight.
Okay, but that's David. Why we ask them, because eventually, you know, somebody's got to answer those kind of questions, so we got to ask them anyway, although we know that.
And we
agree
that
they're both good candidates, so that's not the wrong answer. Yeah, well, Stephen, thanks again for being on the Kudzu Vine, and we hope you do some more great work with the Young Democrats moving forward.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. I'm happy to come on anytime you need a former Marylander to give you their opinion on Southern politics.
Yeah, thanks again.
All right. Good night, guys.
Good evening, Tim.
Good night.